Call the roll, please.
Chair Dobson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Wilder is not here. Director Miller?
Here.
Director Kellum?
Here.
Director Wilkins?
Here.
Director Jacobson?
Here.
Director Wall?
Here.
You have quorum.
Thank you. So we have the consent agenda in front of us, and it includes the minutes, the approved financial statements, and a financial committee appointment. And so this is a good time for me to answer Sherry's email from a week ago, actually before the finance committee meeting. She sent me an email and asked if I had replaced her with Jeff Jacobson. The answer to that question is yes. I didn't answer it at the time because I just saw it a couple days ago. But anyway, Sherry, yeah, you've been replaced, and Jeff is here. He's on board. And Jeff, thank you for taking that. And,
you bet, Jim.
And thank you for participating in the board.
You bet.
Okay. Let's see. Public comment. Do we have anybody online or in the audience that would like to make a comment?
You need approval of agenda and consent agenda first.
Okay. Well, I didn't do that.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the agenda and consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Okay. Hearing all ayes, it's approved. Let's see. I didn't hear any public comments. We'll move to the insurance renewal. And Zach, you want to get that over?
You want to hop up here, David, for a second? Try to go through this fairly quickly. All right. So in the packet, we provided the entire insurance renewal plan so that everyone had it ahead of time. This is almost identical to last year's insurance renewal package. It states the limits. It also goes into details of what we're insuring, the different layers that we have. The important page is page 34 of the packet. If everyone will turn to that, please. What we provided in the packet was the initial cost comparison. However, we had gone through and worked with David and Joanna to make sure that the numbers were a little tighter. And so in doing so, we were able to actually get our savings down a little bit more. So what you're looking at here is a cost comparison from the last year compared to this year on the renewal. As you can see, we're actually decreasing some of the rates in totality about $26,000. And so this is exactly what the board was provided last year. It breaks down the coverages, the types of coverages, and then the layers which we're required to have. It goes all the way down to the very bottom, which is the total premium. So very high level here. If there's questions, I'm happy to answer them. If they are above my understanding, I'm going to shift the ball over to David. But this is identical to last year. I want to reiterate that because there's, while the policies, we did have a decrease, the limits are still the same.
So in summary, we're getting the same coverage for $26,000 less than last year, and we're available for any questions.
Did we have any claims last year?
We had, yeah.
Yeah.
We had Alaska. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. We had the.
We did.
Mm-hmm.
We had the vehicle. Mm-hmm. We had vehicle claim.
Yep.
We had about 40. I think that would be around $43,000.
Yep.
And that's just on the auto. General liabilities, we had none. Prior to, we had about $211,000 in claims on the general liability. Overall, pretty good. We had a work comp fall off, a pretty large claim fall off, and that dropped that by 10%, which helped. So we're going in the right direction on our experience.
Okay.
Pat.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
So, although there's no changes in the amount of coverage, was there any endorsements or addendas added to the policies that any significant changes along those lines?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just one more.
Sherry?
I was just wondering, is the $1 million cyber liability coverage, is that sufficient for a utility of our size?
I believe we have... Let me check something here. We have an excess. Generally, if most of them are carrying a little higher limits than my other utilities that I have, they're up around $3 to $5 million, especially if in light of things that are going on. I believe last year we did quote it. With a higher limit, and it's significantly higher than the current premiums.
So one of the reasons why we don't necessarily fall in the same lines with other utilities is we don't actually keep any personal records of we actually use third parties to actually hold credit card information. We don't retain any of that. In fact, our procedures is actually once we enter the information to a secure third party, we actually shred the information. So our liability is somewhat diminished. We also, our IT services are heavily focused on the cybersecurity part of it, so we work closely with them as well as our software that we purchase to make sure we don't actually keep any compromising information. If we were to be taken over, there's not a whole lot they could actually get from us just because everything's on, most of it's on closed loop systems. The ones that are the most important are on closed loop systems, meaning someone outside of our area can't actually access them. And so that's a little bit separate from this. But that's one of the reasons why our cyber policy is a little bit lower than probably the industry standard, is because we don't necessarily have the same risk that they have.
Thank you very much.
Other questions concerning insurance?
There we go. You got it. I just asked her to go to the motion. The insurance renewal amount exceeds my ability to authorize, so board action is required.
So the page before this one. Back one more. The one with David.
Go forward. Go that way.
So, any opportunity to charge David for this advertising? Thank
you, Jim. So, David, on page 13. The under building, it essentially is unchanged. Two questions.
We went up $100,000 just to make it replace the cost.
Yes. Okay. So would that be reflected in other commercial properties around the interior?
Depending on the age, we're seeing that we're having a real... In fact, I just did an article for Alaska Business Magazine on it. We're having a real problem with older buildings that carriers aren't wanting to insure them because of the age of them in our area. Basically, a lot of these buildings are 20, 30, 40 years old, and not a whole lot's been done to them. The electrical, maybe they've upgraded their panel. The roof, a lot of them have not been replaced. The boilers haven't been replaced. So we're seeing a real hardening in the market for that to get replaced. This building, because it was all remodeled and done, all those things were done. It was very easy to get Alaska National to do this building versus the carrier we have on all the other property, because we save a considerable amount of money by doing that, by separating this building out from the rest of the policy. But we are seeing a lot of that. And so as people are doing upgrades and stuff, we're seeing a big reduction, or at least getting carriers that will want to ride it. But we have a lot of markets going to touch a building that's 40 years old and hasn't had any upgrades.
Second question, same page. So, how sensitive is the deductible to the premium?
It's fairly significant. We're on a $10,000 deductible. We did quote a $50,000 deductible, and and it wasn't a huge savings. It was about $50,000 savings to go to a $500,000 deductible. I just don't feel that that's worth the risk. I mean, that's just too much. It's not enough to save it to go to that, in my opinion.
If you went to $500,000, you would save how much?
$50,000.
Thank you.
With the other $500,000 deductible, the other policy on that specific thing.
Right.
I'm sorry. To go to $250,000 on that.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Jack?
So I'm just looking at the kind of the summary sheet on 34, and I'm sure this answer is buried in here someplace, but so what do the excess policies apply?
They go over your general liability, auto, and workers' comp.
Okay, and then over workers' comp also?
Yes.
And so what is the amount in each layer?
So if... the first layer is the first excess layer is the first layer is $5 million, and that goes over the Alaska National policy of $1 million. So the first layer is with RSUI at $5 million excess. The second layer is with Westfield Specialty, and that's another $500,000. So $500,000 over the first half. Or $5 million, excuse me. Okay. So $5 million over the first $5 million, so that's layering of 10. Then we have an excess third layer of $10 million over the 10 underlying.
And our general liability policy limit itself
is $1 million.
$1 million. So we have $21 million essentially. Thank you.
And we do the same layering with your director's office.
Oh. Up to $21 million?
No.
Okay.
You can.
Or $5 million.
$5 million.
Can't afford that.
Anything else? Zach, do you have anything?
I don't.
Okay. David, do you want to add anything?
No, just... You know, we went through a lot of markets, testing the waters. We got about four or five pages of carriers we went to, trying to find better deals, see if we could. And most of the carriers we have were identical to last year. And they're happy with the account, the pricing. I was pleased with. We're seeing, you know, things kind of calm down a little bit, flatten out. So we were happy with the result.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. And any other questions, let us know.
Looking for a motion?
We need a motion to accept the insurance.
Move to approve the insurance renewal proposal.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Those in favor?
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry, Gary. Go ahead.
Under discussion.
Well, yeah.
I would just comment that it is indeed a red letter day when you get a reduction in your insurance premium. Remember the last time that's happened to anything that I participated in.
Well, we'll give David something to shoot at next year.
Some free advertising.
And some more free advertising. Yeah. Our insurance policy went down, premiums went down too.
Yeah.
These guys are
more than this.
More than this?
No.
I hope not. That's some ramifications.
Okay, those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
Thank you.
So, last year, during our general manager's appraisal efforts, we had some concerns expressed from the board about it being a complicated process. So, Elena, I think, has some suggestions maybe how we might move forward.
Yes. So included in your packet and for conversation is my suggestion for moving forward. So as it has been the case in the past, I've written a self-evaluation where I compared the utility's performance versus the strategic objectives that the board has approved at about last year this time. And then also in the packet, I have the suggested evaluation. So the evaluation would go there would be two different evaluations. One relative to my performance versus the strategic objectives, and two, and then the second one, as has been in the past, my ability to lead the utility, and that's broken down into the different categories of leadership. Throughout both of those, there's opportunity for direct comment and opportunity for goal setting, for expressing what the board might want to see in goal setting for next year. What the board would have a couple of weeks to fill out both of these evaluations that I just described. They would individually come back to us, and then Zane will compile them into a unified board evaluation that would then be presented at the following board meeting. And once we're done with that, we would go into goal setting for the next evaluation period. We will in the packet I have kind of the paper forms for anybody who prefers to fill that out on paper. On Monday you will receive, assuming that we don't make any changes to the process, you will receive electronic forms for whoever prefers to do that electronically. And regardless of how they get to us, we'll give individual ones to Zane for compilation. And unless there are any questions, that's my description of the process.
Okay, open for discussion. Anybody have any thoughts on that process or would like to suggest any changes? Okay, everybody has their head down and not looking up, so I'm assuming that we're good, so that's an indication to move forward with that.
Okay. So then I have my self-evaluation in the packet. Would you like me to go through it? Or
sure.
Okay, so this self-evaluation covers the period from the beginning of the last calendar year to the end of last month. I think the biggest event that defines this evaluation period is our transition to the North Slope LNG. We worked through a series of challenges with that, logistics that were required. At one point, we were getting supply from three different sources while Harvest was commissioning. We were still getting our supply from Titan. We were getting some supplemental supply from the North Slope. We were working through contracts, and we got the trailers to a point where they're in good condition to be workable on the North Slope. We also simultaneously delivered a high level of a construction season by installing nearly 10 miles of new main line in addition to more than 250 service lines. Did not have any lost time injuries. Closed several compliance actions with PHMSA and did not get any new ones opened up. We closed our year with positive EBITDA of 1.1 million above budget, even though, as the board might remember, we had a challenging year last year, both because of supply interruption, of our interruption of supply to interruptible customers, and it being a warmer season than otherwise. We received a clean audit, despite it being the first time that we were subject to a federal single audit. Since it covers last month, the board might remember that we had to restart Titan after Titan was down for a while, and we were able to have emergency gas supply agreements and contracts secured. And I want to highlight that I'm gonna go through several things here. None of this is any kind of individual achievement. It's the achievement of a very, very solid team, and none of these things happened by luck or by accident. We're working together in a cohesive manner, and that's and the team that and the leadership that we've built here at IGU is probably one of my proudest accomplishments from everything that we're going to talk about. So the board had four strategic objectives that they wanted us to concentrate on. We had safety and reliability, financial sustainability and affordability, operational efficiency and workforce development, as well as community engagement. And I'm gonna not gonna read everything that's in this packet. I'm gonna briefly go through through the things here. So no lost time injuries. We had some vehicle damage incidents, but again, no injuries. We had to perform some required and some chosen training, and we've done all of that. As far as PHMSA goes, we have had increased scrutiny because of the prior issues that we've had. Despite those, we were able to close four consent agreements. We received some notices of amendment. We received two of those. Notices of amendment are really a lot of times they're suggestive. We've closed those without any issues, and we're now preparing for a new PHMSA audit in 2026, and we do not have major concerns about what that audit entails. George and his team are really knee deep into working through everything. When PHMSA a note for the newer directors, when PHMSA comes, they can look back up to 5 years, and they can look at our standard operating procedures, our records for anything that has happened, and our what else? Procedures, record. They have to make sure that our procedures match the legislation, and that our actions matched our procedure, and that our records are in order. And they can they can look pretty deep, and they can look pretty far back. We've talked about in here listed. You have some infrastructure reliability items. As the board is aware, we're working hard to continue increasing infrastructure reliability. One of the big items on that list is connecting Fairbanks and the North Pole system, so that we can have connectivity there. It's a massive project that needs a lot of money, and we're looking at ways to fund that without it coming from the rates. I have also listed in here supply chain resilience and fleet modernization efforts that the board is well aware of those efforts there. The North Slope LNG transition has been again one of the biggest things that we've done, both in terms of being able to physically move our supply chain to the North Slope, but also work through the delayed start of that harvest facility while continuing to have a firm supply for our firm customers, working out of Titan, which is an older facility with a lot of challenges. George's ability to maintain that is truly commendable. The strategic plan identified a couple of additional potential things that we could concentrate on. They were not mandates. There were lists of suggested tasks to accomplish the goal. So two of those that were listed there have not been accomplished, and I have descriptions here for both. But one of the items is acquiring mobile vaporizers, so that we can deploy those in event of emergencies. Some emergencies could look like loss of vaporization at one of our main sites, or something happening to one of the main lines going into an artery of town. Though we agree that it continues being an important priority, we do not recommend that we use some of our current very limited savings to acquire one of those, and we're working on additional avenues to try to get those. The most credible of which is the addition of that into the Fairbanks North Scarborough's hazard mitigation plan that then gets approved by FEMA. That then has the potential of being funding as a hazard mitigation action. And then another suggestion in there was that we secure a gas supply agreement with NSTAR. NSTAR is themselves struggling with gas supply, and we agree that it is something that we should continue concentrating on. It would probably be better suited for when NSTAR starts importing LNG into the North Slope. In the meantime, when we had to restart Titan, we did reach out, and there was no gas available to us for liquefaction services from them. Okay, financial sustainability and affordability. I listed things there in terms of how we ended the last fiscal year financially. There was a lot of work and discipline on Zach and his team managing things to small amounts of money made differences to us. We routinely accuse each other of penny pinching, but I think that's what it takes to reach these results. Ratings completed their annual review last year and did not maintain our BBB credit rating, which was an upgrade from the previous year. We had the BBB- 2 years ago, which is another positive outcome. And I talked already about the audit. We have significantly increased our grant application activity. We have not been successful in every grant that we have applied for, but we have been successful in a couple, the biggest one being this $3 million that just got approved through the congressional appropriations. It has not yet made it to EPA. It got awarded to EPA, but hasn't made it to EPA, and then it's going to take a while for EPA to get to us, but that's additional funding for us to be able to continue extending our infrastructure without using rate funding for. We also received other grants, and we're waiting on responses from others, but we have a dedicated grant professional on staff, and we're learning how to do that as an organization. We haven't received any grants prior to 2 years ago when we started receiving those, and we're learning how to do that, but I've listed just a few of those in here. I think our biggest miss in this category is we're only going to be able to maintain or decrease rates with increased sales volumes. We have not reached the pro forma numbers for sales volumes, and that, of course, we have our litany of reasons for that are outside of anything that we believe that staff would have the ability to influence, things such as the relative small difference between the cost of oil and the cost of gas. To residential customers specifically, and that difference being even smaller for big commercial customers, in addition to the cost of conversions. However, we're working really hard on large customer development. We're not missing opportunities to get in front of decision makers. It is a harder proposition to make than otherwise because of through all of the handling that natural gas has to go through in order to make it to interior Alaska. The price is not as competitive as the performa imagined it would be. Operational efficiency and workforce development is the next area that the strategic plan identified as us needing to concentrate on, and I've broken that down in a couple of different categories. So on construction performance, I think we did really well. We were able to, in addition to the fact that most of the main lines that we've installed were main lines funded by grant funding. We were able to reduce the cost of those main lines because we've done 100% of the work in-house, and the year-over-year price of the in-house work has decreased through, again, George and Chris is here. Here's our construction project manager, and their careful oversight of costs and the development of seasonal construction crews. I want to spend an extra minute on that because our construction activity is such a seasonal activity. We are unable to maintain staffing that that is year-round, and so we're having to constantly recruit a seasonal workforce. But because these guys are good managers, and we have created this environment where a lot of our seasonal workforce comes back year after year, and with our ability to not have to start from scratch with training, also comes our ability to for our key positions, the drillers, the crew leads, also comes our ability to lower costs, and I think that is commendable. I have some things in here regarding workforce development. Contract and policy improvements, I've only included the big ones that are visible to the board, but we're constantly improving policies and procedures. Buffy Kuiper, she works with Zach and his department. She's very careful and very good about policies and procedures and creating things that we can replicate, and we're constantly improving and easing policies and procedures, and I think that's made all of our lives easier, even though listing them here does not get to the level that the board needs to be involved, and we're constantly working on that. A couple of the things that we feel are strategic objectives have not been accomplished, and we would love to continue working towards those. Programming and coding specifically, there's a lot of programming and coding that goes into our storage facilities, and we rely on contractors for that. It's very complicated programming, and it's rather narrow. It's not typically thought in general engineering courses, but our ability to have in-house programmers for the storage sites would significantly improve. Not necessarily, though that's important to how much we pay for that, but also our ability to be self-sufficient and not rely on contractors, because there are also not many contractors who are trained to program our storage sites. In community engagement, I've listed a lot of the things that we've done. I think the customer growth I already spoke about that. That does not meet pro forma numbers. However, we're out there. We're in the community. I think that community. People in the community know how to access us, and our activity out there makes us have more and more access to members of the community. And there are things listed in here that do not, though they do not directly lead to the fulfillment of IGU mission, they lead to being a good community partner. And that too is important, to make friends before you need them. We tried to add additional assistance for low to medium income families to convert to natural gas. We're trying to do that in a way that does not continue incentivizing the increase in pricing. We were not successful in acquiring grants. We're going to continue working on those. And I think that that we've had a, I'm just going to go quickly through this summary. I'm sure you all have already read it, so I don't want to continue boring you with it. But I think that we've done a lot of real work, a lot of good work. There are still areas where progress was limited, and we're going to continue working on those areas. But I think the three of us sitting here, we have all now been in our new roles for a couple of years. It's rather unusual for the core leadership team to all be new all at the same time, rather than, you know, taking turns. But I think we're getting more confident in our specific areas of expertise, and I think that is showcased through our results. And again, I'm fortunate to work with some of the best people in the industry, and I'm thankful for that.
Thank you. Okay, so any comments from the board or questions from the board concerning what you just heard from Elena, or any of how we may want to move forward with the board evaluation of the general manager? Jack.
Yes.
You're hiding back there. You're not
So, first a question. Where is the borough at on subsidizing conversions?
They still have funding available. It's $9,200 for oil to gas conversion, and say if you have a Toyo stove and a furnace that are both on oil, you get $9,200 for each of those. And then I want to say it's $14,500 for wood stove change out, so you'd have to take your wood stove out and put something that's not wood in. It's about $5,000 for taking out a wood stove and putting a new wood stove in.
What was the $14,500 for?
Wood stove change out. So you'd have to take your wood stove out and put a gas fireplace in, or add that to the gas boiler cost. There is conversation now about the fact that, so right now Fairbanks North Star Borough is the non-attainment area. If you were to separate Fairbanks from the North Pole. Fairbanks has, for the large part, fixed its air quality problem. So there is some desire to separate the two, because then 100% of the new funding would be targeted to the problem area. And also, if there were any sanctions, those would only apply to the troubled area rather than to the entire borough. I understand that targeted airshed grant funding has been appropriated by Congress every year for the five worst air quality areas at up to $10 million. But EPA is in possession of those funds and has not made the notices of funding opportunities available. And my understanding is that this now 3 years of funding is going to come all at once, and it's still under question where that would apply to and what that would be used for. Because in addition to, say, a Woodstove changeout program, making that same funding available to better insulate homes could lead to emission reductions. DEC is still considering their options on that.
So has the borough considered raising their limits?
They just have. Mm-hmm. The 9,200 used to be 7,500 prior to Mayor Hopkins. Mm-hmm. Mayor Hopkins did that, probably half a year in his tenure. Mm-hmm.
And then a comment rather than a question. Coders that I've talked to say they don't code anymore. Mm. Just AI does it. Mm. They just tell AI, this is what I need to happen, and then AI writes the code.
George, you want to answer that? You have a comment on that?
A lot of the code is written by AI these days, but a lot of ours is inherited code to where we're making fine-tuned adjustments to it. So it's things like changing boiler set points, sequence of operations, mm-hmm. not necessarily starting from scratch and wanting to upload and backtrack. It's a lot of our PLC and HMI setups that we're working on. So
I don't know. It just seems like if AI knows the code, knows what you're doing, and is understands it, then whatever. It's just a comment. That's all.
Crazy. Okay, Gary?
Just to add to the record, Jack's question. So there's a condo warehouse over there. We have a couple of units, small, not very big, but we shut down two Toyo stoves, and the borough gave us a nice check for $15,000 and some dollars. We went out and bought a really nice gas furnace, and they were a pleasure to deal with. It was really quite simple. And quite rewarding, because we're on gas, and all 10 of us are on gas. And so I can add that to the record, that as far as I'm concerned, programs work great.
Elena, I joined you at the Borough Assembly a couple weeks ago. And while we were sitting there waiting to get our turn in line, we talked about the borough attorney not wanting the borough to, I thought you said, write grants on our behalf. What were you talking about? Or did I get that all wrong?
No, we're just in public session, so I'm trying to.
Okay, well, you can hold that if you'd like to hold the answer to that until later.
There are mixed results depending on what kind of grant there is to apply for. So we have a great partnership with the borough. They have applied for the last couple of years for these congressional direct spending appropriations. We have not had the same results on other types of grants.
Okay, well, why don't you just hold your answer to that and give it when you think it's safe. Okay, Gary.
To Elena. Elena, page 55, at the very beginning of your self-evaluation, second paragraph, third line. So the sentence reads, North Slope Natural Gas for community use in interior Alaska. Would that sentence not be more appropriate to just stop in at the word use and delete interior Alaska?
Yeah.
I
can see that.
Is that due because of Talkeetna supply? It's not interior Alaska.
Oh, Jeff. We don't get to that detail.
Okay, Jerry, you can have that.
I don't know if this is a fair question to ask you, Elena, but over the last performance period, if you could grade yourself on efforts or maybe progress in the margins of attracting large commercial customers, what would you grade yourself? And then the second part of that is, over the course of the next year, do you have an idea of what it is that you intend to do, and how can the board help in that regard?
Sure. So I think there's two types of grading that could be done, one on effort and one on result, and there's only one that matters, right? I would say that we've had conversations with all except one, with most large commercial customers, to include very in-depth conversations about supply. I will say that the pricing is an issue when compared with the alternatives, and including the cost, the capital cost that would be necessary for the conversions. I would say that if you, when we just look at results, I would not give myself a satisfactory rating because we were not able to attract and convert large commercial customers. To include, we were not able, again for the same economic reasons, to incentivize some of the existing commercial customers who have alternatives to use gas versus their alternative. As far as what we're looking at through the next year, I think much like it is the case with individual homeowners who wait until they need to install a new boiler anyway to convert to natural gas, the best use of our efforts should be directed towards similar situations, the most obvious of which being Fort Wainwright, that has to make a decision that is different than their existing setup. And in that case, when capital cost is already something that has to be spent, then the narrative for natural gas benefits becomes a lot more easier. Specifically in the Fort Wainwright situation, in addition to just the cost-benefit analysis, the decision is very political. So to the extent there's any pull that the board might have in terms of influencing political opinion, that would be very helpful. Other than that, the board is going to approve a budget. We're still working through that. I think that I guess you don't have to remind us right now, but keeping costs as low as possible is going to be important in our ability to move forward. At the same time, we have to balance that against the realities of the constraints we're going through and the need for capital improvements that at the sites, etc.
Okay, Jeff, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, in my last two previous career positions, I worked exclusively with employees that were represented by unions, up to five different unions, so I thought it was interesting and unusual that our operators voted to decertify being represented by their union. Is that the local operating engineers 302?
No, it's IBEW.
IBEW, okay.
That does not happen very often.
So we must have treated the employees very well and offered them health benefits and retirement benefits that compensated their dues, or?
I don't want to talk too much about it in fear of any issues that might come up. But yes, we did treat employees fairly, and we did not offer them anything extra than anybody who's non-represented is offered at IGU. I'd love to have.
And then also a comment. To have so many seasonal hires returning is really advantageous. Working at Public Works, we rely on a heavy and large seasonal work crew in the winter time, and it's really hard to get back experienced, trained employees year after year after year. And so I commend you for that and the staff that works with them to have a working environment that they want to come back and work here.
Thank you.
Okay. We don't need to take any action, I don't believe, on the evaluation. It just will come to us, and we'll start working through it. So let's see. We have moved on to the Finance Committee report. Jack, you have the floor.
Yes, and so I have to coordinate my notes with. Okay. So, the start of it is on what page?
Page 76.
Okay, a couple of things then on the financial summary worth talking about is that the only thing really on this, on the first page, on page 76 of the packet, is talking about the credit that Middle Fork owes us. Basically, they're going to be giving us money back at the tune of about $4,000 per load. There's about $800,000 left in that credit, and that's amounts of 200 loads, and so that credit is going to be consumed in this fiscal year. We'll have used that up. And that you'll note that the cash in hand includes basically that credit now, up at the $4.5 million cash on hand includes that credit. Then on the next page, there's a statement that says year to date, we're talking about engineering, year to date this department is $175,000 on the budget because of grant work reimbursements. And I was assured that even without the grant work reimbursements, the engineering would be under budget.
I did try to change it. I don't know how it didn't get included at first. I thought it was
okay. He gave himself a sad face.
Yeah,
rating.
I did. Erica sent out. I looked at it. And was like, I sent her the wrong one. So yep.
Anyway, they would have been under budget even without the grant reimbursements. I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't the grant reimbursements covering an above budget issue. Next, I think it's worth going to the dashboard, and that is on page 85.
84 and 85. I don't know which one you want.
Anyway, if everybody's got an 845, just look at what I can actually find, which is in my finance committee packet. And so a couple things. This the dashboard paints a considerably better picture than it has in the past. The transportation last month was 31.7% over budget, and now it's 2.4% over budget, and that's in dollars per MCF, not in actual dollars, but in dollars per MCF, which is really what really counts. They were 31.7% over budget last month, year to date, and now they're 2.4% only over budget year to date. And then cost of sales was 10.2% in dollars per MCF, 10.2% over budget last month, and now it's only 0.7% over budget. So a considerable improvement in that category also. And then in operating income, last month that was 5.5% over budget, and now it is 32.4%. It was 5.5% over budget, and now it is 32.6% under budget. So considerable in that thing. And looking again, like I always like to do, that operating income without accounting depreciation and administration is about 1.475 million. And year-to-date budget versus a year-to-date budget of 210,000, so it's a 1.2 million over budget the operating income. Another thing that I looked at is that EBITDA last month was 24.7% under budget? No, it was 26.8% under budget, and now it's 24.7% over budget. So, considerable improvement in that category. The one thing here that showed some concern, I thought, was that we have gone from on the level, budgeted levels, in the big storage tank, or storage in general, total storage, is last month it was 1.1 million under budget. Now it's 1.76 million under budget. But Zach and Elena assured me that they are not concerned with that, and that we can work with that going forward. Also, you'll note that in the budget versus the actual year-to-date cost per MCF, the budget was $22.99, and the actual now is $22.26, which means we are 73 cents under budget, and last month we were 62% over budget. So considerable improvement in that regard. Looking at the next page, similarly in the looking at annual budget versus projected, last month the projected for the end of the year was $25.14, which was 49 cents over budget, and now we are 32 cents under budget. So improvement in all regards. The last thing I want to look at is the this chart, and you'll note that there's been addition to this chart, and it's the 10-day supply, which hasn't been before, and I was wondering why it intersected the 20-day supply. It seemed like it should always be under. But Elena had a great answer for that, and I'll let her go.
Can you remember?
Yes, I remember. I remember that I was going to ask Zach to change the title of 10-day supply to be more representative, because the 10-day supply does not is line currently is not the same as 20-day supply. So the 10-day supply line, the new purple line, takes into account the fact that we would not be depleting our whole reserves of LNG. We would need to keep about 10%, which is about 550,000 gallons, as a keep cold quantity. If you, in an extreme emergency, one could push out everything that's in every tank. However, we would not want to do that. So, for all intents and purposes, that 10-day supply is our contractual line with Harvest. If we are unable to maintain a 10-day worth of supply, we then can trigger cover clauses from our contract, which is why then you see the two lines intersecting there towards the end. The 10-day supply assumes 10-day supply plus 550,000 gallons.
And the other supply lines do not?
None of the other supply lines assume that now, correct.
So I don't have anything else except just a follow-on question. So it's been cold again.
Mm-hmm.
Any concerns about storage levels now after it's been cold again for quite a while?
So in addition... Oh, sorry. Is that a question to Zach?
Just okay. Whoever. I don't know.
I'll
I was
take
looking
it.
At Zach, but maybe it's your question.
I'll take it.
He wasn't going to take it, so...
In addition to the fact that it's been cold, we have also had a UAF burning gas for going on week two now, and we have the Dalton Highway has been closed for about 40 hours. It just reopened as of last night. They had issues with snow, snow clearing. Then trucks weren't able to move because they died. And then there were trucks that were abandoned in the middle of the road, and the state couldn't get them out anyway. So that and a couple of other of other issues, we're still above both the green line and the purple line. We're a little bit closer to those than this graph shows. We're at today we're at 23 days as compared to the green. So 23 days not trued up and probably 15 trued up. So we're still in a good spot. We should have 8 trailers arriving tonight. 14,000 gallons on average, as compared to our yesterday send out of 107,000 gallons. The fact that I just know that off the top of my head, I hope reassures you that we're looking at it very closely, and we're we're on top of it. We have supply. We're good for now. It's closer than we would prefer. I do have to say that Middle Fork has been great to work with, but Harvest has been also very good to work with. They have had phase weather there. In phase weather, nobody can move around on the leases unless they have a loader escort. So though there is nothing contractually that triggers the Harvest team escorting us on and off the lease, which does not, that doesn't mean the pad, the whole lease, there's a gate there. Harvest is escorting Middle Fork on and off the lease with a loader. We don't pass that initial requests. We haven't had to make those requests again. That just happens regularly, and they too are tracking our inventory levels regularly, and we're all working together. We'll be okay.
Thank you. That's all I have, Jeff.
I've got a question. Jeff, I mentioned at the start of the meeting that I had replaced Sherry with you. Were you able to make the last meeting?
Yes, I did.
Thank you for that, and thanks for making that. You're going to learn a lot from Jack.
I already have.
Yeah, cool. So, Elena, you mentioned to me today earlier that that West, what's her name? The trucking company that shut down?
Alaska West
had broke down and walked off and abandoned their truck kind of in the middle of the road, I'm assuming. I don't know. And that you said something to the effect that that DOT did not have the capability or maybe even the permission to move it. Is that kind of where it was?
Yeah, the DOT attempted eventually to remove it and was unable to. Recovery vehicle had to be sent out there, and it had to get access throughout all the other trucks. And
which is kind of concerning to me when I heard it, because you know the way I see this, if a trucking company can walk off and leave their equipment, it blocks the road, and all of a sudden nobody has access. And, you know, while, you know, I hesitate to bring up anything that would cost more, do you think it would be advantageous to us to talk to DOT about the legality of them moving an abandoned truck and maybe talking about a bonding or something that might facilitate moving that piece of equipment? I mean, we have kind of a significant issue with timing and capacity. So, anyway, just a thought.
So, Roger Brown, the GM at Middle Fork, and I have been in contact with Commissioner Anderson through this, both because of the snow recovery efforts that needed to happen from the DOT side and this particular issue. Though I do not have the details, I do know that DOT attempted to, with their equipment, remove the vehicle. However, they do not own recovery vehicles that would be required to pull that truck out. They didn't have enough force there.
So I guess the way you explained it to me, what I was visualizing is the truck was kind of across the road, gravel of the road. You say pull it out. Was it in the ditch?
Pull it from where it was blocking the road. They had a loader that was tied to a grader that was tied to another truck, and they were all trying to move that that truck and were unable to. I'll show you a video.
Gary?
Tim, I think that's a really good idea. I would only observe that in a few months we'll have a new DOT person, and That would be a really good thing to talk to them about as they get their teeth into the DOT issues.
Pete, do you have any thoughts on that?
No.
Right there.
I have a couple of questions on the report.
I didn't have a report, but if you want one, I'll give you one.
No, on my report, I think.
Oh, on that.
It's just one for the family. We have to, you know, I have joint report.
Crazy uncle.
Strike that. So on page, this I think is to Zach, and page 76 of the director's manual. It has to do with heating degree days. The other day in the finance meeting, there was a lot of discussion about heating degree days, and I think we all kind of know that it's important in the utility business. And so, if it is important, Zach, could you do it this way? Let's just take line 20 and 21. I read that there were 194 more heating degree days than budgeted for the month. So that's nice. But I don't know, is that 1% more, or is that 10?
I can tell you exactly what
more?
That is.
What's that?
I can tell you exactly what it is.
Well, I don't want to know here, because anyway. So I guess what I'm asking is, if we just did a little calculation, we would give import to that sentence. Particularly with the weather we had, it would be nice to know where we are percentage-wise with HDD. Is that something, Zach, is that just a matter of...
So let me take that. So that's something that I take a look at all the time. And it's something that and Zach and I, you know, talk about a lot. And basically, the issue is that heating degree days are only a part of the demand. They don't drive the whole demand. There's lots of other stuff that drives the whole demand. So you can't equate, you know, a change in heating degree days to a change in consumption. So although it is something that's very easy to calculate, there's not a whole lot that you can make of it when compared to actual consumption.
Isn't it one of the drivers? It comes time to budget the number of degree days that are going to be budgeted higher or lower.
Right, but it's not everything that goes into the budget.
Is it a major component?
Yes, it's a major component, but it affects only firm customers. We regress all of our customer base, but sorry, Jack, I forgot your last name. I apologize. Director Wilbur was trying to say that there's other factors like oil prices, customers being able to switch over. So how I explained it in the finance committee, our heating degree days really are driven by firm customers, customers who don't have the ability to switch over to another fuel source. So the heating degree days are it's a regression that we use every day that's tied into that chart that we just had up on the board on how we project demand for our interruptible customers, to include the university and the hospital. It's driven by other factors that are challenging to budget for. We go as far as we will call customers ahead of our budget and say, hey, what do you anticipate? What can you tell us that you may be using for demand next year? Sometimes we have some pretty good relationships with some of our large customers, but for the most part, they don't know yet, because it depends on what oil prices are going to do. So to answer your question, heating degree days are very important to how we budget for demand and how we develop the budget. More so, it also gives us a baseline as we move forward to, you know, eventually the goal would be obviously firm customers all the way around. So for the most part, our heating degree days and how the budget projects what the demand is going to be for firm customers, it's pretty tight. That really goes to my predecessor, but he has years and years of data. So I think I think I answered your question. If I did not, I can go into more detail. We'll love talking about weather and heating degree days.
When I read that sentence, it just leaves me cold. I don't know what 194 means.
Gary, your point simply was, if you're going to put a sentence in like that, could I know how much above or below a standard heating degree day that is? Is that right?
Well, I guess what I'm thinking is that particularly this year, we must have shorted the budget in heating degree days because of the cold weather we've had. So this report every month would say, well, in this case, 706 more heating degree days. How much is it? Is it 10% less?
It is 10%.
And that drives the budget. And you just have to.
It drives part of the budget.
It is
right.
It's a major component. And you're saying that the interruptibles are always off that. You're not part of that HP. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't affect it with their own. It doesn't affect it because they're not part of the calculation.
So let me get Elena. She wanted to put her 25 cents in.
If we turn to page 78, Gary, I think that'll give you the answers you're looking for. So you see statement of operations up at the top, and then you have MCF, and then right above operating expenses it says HDD. That's heating degree days. So you can see budgeted and actuals in January, and then if you keep going, you'll see budgeted and actuals for year to date.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know where you are on page 78.
HDD, just right above operating revenues, see HDD.
Oh, right there. Oh, okay. All right. I'm sorry, Elena. Would you say it again?
So I was saying that I think that will give you the answers you're looking for, because you were asking, is that 10%, how much is that? You wanted some quantification of the heating degree days versus budget, and I think that will give it to you. So you'll see in January we budgeted to have 2,049 heating degree days, and in reality we had 2,243. Which is the difference of 194 that Zach was talking about. And then if you keep going in that same line, I'll give you the year-to-date.
Okay. It's really up to you folks.
But while we're there, I want to...
Let me get...
Well, I just want to talk on this issue. He's going to change... I don't know.
No, you're right. Go ahead. I was going to change.
Okay. So, and just to show that the heating degree days does not drive demand. The demand, so heating degree days for January were 10% over budget, yet the consumption was only 2% over budget. And year to date, it's 9% over budget, heating degree days. And demand is actually 1% less than budget, so it doesn't drive demand. It drives demand to some degree, but it's not the whole picture by any means.
Okay. I thank you for that. I guess I would then say, is that if lines 20 and 21 on page 76 were just deleted from the report, it wouldn't make the report any better or any worse.
I like it. I mean, I think it's a good part of it. Oh, but it could say percent over budget too if we want to.
I really don't see this getting anywhere.
Yes.
And I'd like to get to Pete because he hasn't talked hardly all about it.
I did have a couple of comments.
Okay, well wait till after Pete, and I'll get you.
Well, I am changing the subject.
No, you're fine. No, you go ahead.
I just wanted to go back to what you were talking about the truck. You know, and it didn't dawn on me until well in the conversation that this is unexplored territory. We're bringing gas down from the North Slope. This hasn't been considered before. You're absolutely right. And though bonding would pay for and making it some kind of law change or something like that, my question, and I doubt that anyone has the answer at this table, but does the state have the kind of recovery equipment that is needed for...
Well, I guess, Pete, the way I was thinking of it, if there was bonding, the state could send a commercial.
Yeah.
Remover up there and pay for it with the bonding. Anyway, I don't know how big of a problem it is, and I agree with it. We're kind of starting to tread in unfamiliar water.
That urgency hasn't been an issue. In real time, like
quite honestly, when she mentioned that, I couldn't imagine a trucking company walking off and leaving their truck. Anyway, okay, Gary, did you have something else?
I did, thank you. When Jack gave his report, looking out are we seeing the results of bigger trailers, more capacity when we see the transportation swing? We went from 34% over budget. Is 2.4% under budget. Is that a function of the bigger trailers?
No. So the bigger trailers are seeing more offloads, so we are getting more gallons on a per trip basis. The savings that you're talking about, or that change, is because of the credit that's being offset from Middle Fork.
So the bigger, the 14,000 gallon capacity traders are making a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But that's not the answer to your question.
What is the answer?
No, the answer to your question, why that change, I mean, that's part of it. Yes, we're receiving more liquid, but that difference in that percentage that Director Wilbur spoke to is because of the credit that we're receiving back from Middle Fork.
Okay. Now, last question. There was discussion on Tuesday about the graph that Jack held up. I know there's a lot of information here, and it's important information. So my question is, and this is probably way off base, does the minimum value commitment have any play into this? Mm-hmm. Is there a straight line that would go left to right to see how we're doing on meeting our MVC?
There's not a line. There's other portions of this ginormous workbook that calculate the force that we don't present. The number that you could look at right there, and I believe Elena focuses on that number a lot, and that's kind of what I put it there, was really for her, is that 175,000 gallons right there that Erica's putting her curse over, and how it's negative. So we're short right now on MVC as of the date of this report by about 175,000 gallons, which is, that's 10 trucks. So that's not, we're right in line with where we want to be.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see that line. So would there be a line that goes across that chart?
No.
Reflecting that 175?
No.
The MVC is annualized, and it doesn't matter how much we pick up and when. So if we were to put a line on the chart, it wouldn't... It wouldn't be fair to what the MVC is. MVC doesn't care when through the year we get it.
It just matters at the end of the contractual year.
So does that lowest inventory, 486,000 gallons, that's expected to be in the tank on 5/31/26?
Mm-hmm. As of the date of this report. True. Remember, it's just a projection, and temperatures change all the time. That's why we look at this on a daily basis. So that number right there that says 175, mm-hmm. that is significantly different as of this morning than it was, because we've changed our nominations. Elena's changed the nominations, so we're receiving more LNG based on management's discussions on what George needs to do for temperature levels and what the weather has been forecasted to do in the next couple months.
And so 5/31 date is? What is that significant?
That's a tracker for us. It's basically a placeholder to show us the lowest inventory level that we will get to this year is currently sitting on May 31st.
So That's the projection.
Yes, that has changed. It changes every day. That's just kind of a, it's just something we look at, because May, our demand's only about 25,000 gallons a day. I mean, that's probably kind of generous. It just depends on how warm May will be. So 486,000 gallons is not problematic at all at that time of year.
Okay, so it does play into it. It just plays into it down in that lower right corner. And
yeah.
Put another line up here, just messes up the chart.
Yeah, no more lines.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Jim. That's all I have. Thank you.
You're welcome. George? All right, I'll attempt to keep mine short and sweet today, if you guys let me. So construction build-out, we're still in a lot of the planning phase. We're a little bit concerned that we're going to have a late thaw-out with how cold the temperatures we've had and the amount of snow that we've accrued. So kind of accounting for that and trying to plot and plan where we're going to move first or where's going to thaw-out first. A lot of our work so far that's slated for mainline work this year is downtown Fairbanks. So you get all the joy of conflicting utilities and wood stave piping that you have no way to locate. So we're working with the city and some of the other utilities to plot and plan those routings now, get ahead of trying to figure it out during construction. A lot of the budget development for capital projects is underway right now for fiscal year 27. So Chris, Zach, and I have sat down on those a couple of times to try to put things together. Moving on to the operations side of things, distribution and storage have been relatively uneventful for this month, which I am, knock on wood, I'm thankful for an uneventful month after some of the winter that we've had. No lost time injuries, no vehicle damages. Slowing down on turn-ons, but that'll pick up as we get back into construction season. And then the big push that we've got on that side is preparing for the upcoming PHMSA audits. So there's a radical overhaul of our operator qualification program that we're working on right now. So that one will be hopefully good steps in the right direction. Titan, we've been working with NSTAR on trying to get gas supply firmed up and supplied for that one so that we've got the keep warm gas that we need, not for the liquefaction production, but just to keep the facility up and preserved. And they've been actively working between the plant and at Talkeetna on making some kind of reliability upgrades, which have been good to see. I don't have any updates on the PHMSA front other than preparing for audits. And as Elena's already touched on, and you guys are well aware, we're fighting winter weather and road conditions on the Dalton. So staying in close contact with Middle Fork and Harvest on making sure things keep moving.
George, how did the new trailers operate in the severe cold that we shipped out to?
The new trailers have been holding up really well. We did have a lot of really good lessons learned from the one that was in the rollover. So I'm working with Premier Cryogenics on adding additional lifting and recovering hooks, other areas that could be reinforced, and mechanisms and things that could work better. We've had some minor issues on some of the older trailers with the extreme colds that we're seeing up there. Just when you start seeing that negative 50 up north, some of the actuators on the valves don't like to cooperate. So learning curve on that one as well, but nothing that we haven't been able to dance our way around.
Derek? Are the trips up to North Slope and back, they're just taking longer because of the weather? Is that correct?
Largely. That and there's been delays and shutdowns on the roadway, so we've been seeing about 30 hours a trip. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. As opposed to what is the normal?
When we saw fair weather conditions, we were seeing some that, well, really we've been seeing 30 as an average. We've seen some that have been 50-hour trips.
Wow.
So, which really can wreak havoc on Middle Fork's side because you have drivers that are timing out on their hours of operating hours. And yeah.
But it also reinforces the board's approval at the last meeting to purchase more trailers when you have some tied up for as long as you do, having more into rotation is great.
It also worked out really nicely having the additional trucking contract in place, that if Middle Fork's having drivers that are down for that turnaround time, Black Gold's been able to step in and provide drivers as needed. So that was a that was a productive move as well.
Jim? I'm not aware of the historical timeline for applications for service lines, and so compared to last year, there's 265 service lines, and then this year there's 55 that's already been approved to date. Are we on track for this time of year being only March for applications submitted? Or?
We are not. We are further behind than we'd like to be on our service line approvals. We are expecting an uptick towards the end of winter here, especially with during some of these cold snaps, the struggles that homeowners had in getting fuel oil delivered. I think we'll turn people over to the natural gas side, having that reliability. There are also a couple of those service line customers that are larger commercial customers, which will kind of level out that playing field when you think, I believe, Zach, it's 10 residential is the equivalent to one small commercial.
Pretty close, yeah.
So those numbers can be skewed that way.
And this is kind of a question for you and also Elena. When we talk about conversions versus new construction, what is the plan to work with builders so that as they are designing their new construction that they're going with a natural gas unit versus an oil and then having to do a conversion? Do we have a good network connection where we're anticipating a project coming online and getting our foot in the door saying, hey, have you considered this? You know, in the long run, you know, there's less contamination, there's fuel line, no interruption with heating fuel.
So this was one that Elena worked on before I got into it, but she built great relationships with local builders, and it really hasn't been a push to where and when new construction is being developed. It's being prioritized as one of the more primary heat opportunities.
Okay.
We're also, we currently have a vacant business development position that we're recruiting for, but Carl Golke was our business development representative for several years now, and he would have notifications sent to him every time people apply for permits, for construction permits, both at the boroughs and the cities, and that was his way of making sure that he stays on top of it, and we're definitely going to. But I cannot take credit for that idea, that was all Carl. But we're going to make sure that whoever gets hired continues doing that.
Good.
Okay. Eric?
First, do we keep track on a regular basis of the number of trucks per day or per week?
Yes, we do. I have a chart that I update off of Harvest Morning Report, and then Zach tracks it on the tail end of the offload side.
I tell people what we're doing, and they'll ask, well, how many trucks? And I'll be like, wait, 70? People go, what?
Per one.
Huh?
70 per one.
Oh, 70 per month. It doesn't make a difference. The point is you give them some number, and they go, what? From 70 trucks of gas on the road every month? And you'll say, yeah. You go, wow, I didn't know that was happening.
We've been getting about six a day.
Six trucks a day?
I'm sorry.
We've been getting about six a day.
I guess my point isn't so much the number, is the fact that could we take that number that you track and put it into this report?
Yeah.
This X, we received so many trucks this month.
So it's up to you folks. It's in the financial packet as well. It's in gallons. We disclose how many gallons we've received. And you divide that by 14,000 and say how many loads we've received.
We could make it more obvious. Yeah.
I just think it's impressive.
It's in gallons, Gary.
What are you complaining about?
So what is that?
I'm sorry.
Because he said 70, you said no, and
180.
That's what I thought.
It's in pints.
He referenced 14,000 gallons. Sorry, I was just, yeah, you're right. All right. My bad, Drake Wilkin. It's about 180 trips.
180?
1.8. You sound like a asshole.
Okay. Well, this has been fun.
So for clarity, sorry, I just need to say something to the record. We have been getting about 6 trailers per day, which makes 180 per month for now. We're also going to decrease as our demand decreases. We're going to go to probably 4 per day. We're trying to see if Harvest will let us go to even less than that. Per the contract, we cannot go less than 75,000 gallons per day. Because that was at the design phase, the halfway capacity of the plant, and it becomes inefficient after that. They have been able to turn it down more than that while keeping efficiency. So we'll and for us, it's better to get sustained, say 3 or 4 a day year round, rather than having these stops and starts and stops. And it's the same experience for the for Middle Fork. A year, we're looking at about 1,200 to 1,300 loads a year.
So, Elena, are we going to go into executive session?
Yes.
Okay, well.
Are you wanting to do that right now?
Yeah, do you have something there?
I do have this.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Did we do the general manager report? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We can skip it. It's
okay. She's got a lot to say.
Okay.
Okay. That's good. You've got to be tired.
So I'm going to go ahead and make the motion.
Okay. Pardon me. Do we want to just close up this meeting so we can adjourn out of the executive session out the door?
So you want me to ask Derek to make a motion that at the end of executive session we are adjourned?
Yeah, we'll do all our comments before we go into executive session.
Would you amend your what you're going to say to put it back, please?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to move that the board enter executive session to discuss staffing, trailer maintenance, and contractual matters, items the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of Interior Gas Utility, to include the Board of Directors, General Manager Elena Setup, Director of Operations George Deal, CFO Zach Bamram, Executive Assistant Erica Logrick, and Attorney Zane Wilson. At the end of said executive session, the board will adjourn. Sunny day.
Okay. Now that we may have to modify that because we may need to come back in to do a motion if we decide to vote on a deal.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, just play it loose here. For
okay.
Yeah.
You need a second.
Pete, did you second it?
Oh. Thank
you. Okay. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.